Bye, Johnny, everyone. This is Professor Amin Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, Africana Studies Department. We want to welcome you here to the Conscious Corner by way of Community Education Network. I want to thank Brother Rashiki for providing us this platform. And we're here every Wednesday and Tuesday at 6 p.m. California time or Pacific time. We want to also welcome Brother Ernest McBride Jr., as well as Brother Ahi and Brother Mashinda, who are the foundations of our Zoom cast. Today we're going to be having a very, very serious discussion about Martin Luther King Jr. You know, they have had parades all across the nation, and they've had people providing service all across the nation. There's just a tendency for people to not really, especially young people, not really giving him credit for where they are today and how he transformed America. So we're going to go around the panel, see what they thought about his legacy, and what do they think were some of the most important things that he may have accomplished, or even critique some of the things that they felt that were not as helpful as he thought it was. So we're going to start with you, Brother Ernest. What do you think about Martin Luther King Jr.? I know they have a parade in Long Beach. Been having one for years.
Yeah, this was about a 30-something, I think, anniversary of doing, having a parade. And then they had got the King's Park. It used to be just a Long Beach Recreation Park. And I think in 60, it was an article in the paper yesterday where they changed the name to King's Park. And so we celebrated every year on the third Saturday, rather than the Monday. And so we do the parade on that Saturday preceding the birthday, but it came like a couple of days after his birthday. And then I remember in the 60s when a lot of this was going on, because I was had just gotten out of the Army in 63 in August, when they had, just prior to Kennedy's assassination, because it was like in November, but that August, I had just gotten out of the Army, and then a lot of this was, they were doing a lot of protesting over the Vietnam War then. And I can remember the NAACP was kind of like, well, we don't, they were trying to make that strategic move not to be too far in front. And I think King's organization came in and kind of picked up the mantle and got it going, got those marches going. There was a lot of students here in Long Beach that even went back to that march, so it was, I don't know. And then when you start really, they started to analyze a lot of the speeches that he did when he was in that Memphis jail, when he wrote that I Have a Dream speech, and all that kind of come to the forefront, and people really begin to analyze that. And then it really made it, it was like prophetic, it's kind of like he was a prophet, because all these things he was talking about is coming to being, I learned something new every day, about the different speeches that he wrote, because more and more they're starting to analyze that and write about it. So, but at the time, because I was still attached to the military, and then we had people kind of protesting us, you know, the youth, the march, because they was kind of faulting the military guys, you know, for the Vietnam thing. So that it, I mean, this was just prior to Vietnam, but they were really trying to get us out of there. And so it was a lot of, you know, kind of, man, you're working for the government, and you're actually in the, still attached to the military, because when they draft you, you're enlisted for a 6-year obligation. And you know, 2 years active, 2 active reserve, and then 2 years inactive. So it was a, you know, I was kind of a, for me, it was kind of a struggle, because I couldn't see us being over there, but you couldn't really voice a lot of public opinion about it because you're still attached to the service, you know.
But what did you think about King?
Oh, I thought, you know, that was really brave, you know, and even guys like that didn't get a lot of the credit, because the leader got most of the credit, but like John Lewis is the guy that really amazed me. I mean, because he was right at the front of those students when they was getting beat down. I mean, he was the one that was getting beat down all the time. So that, you know, so to me, that was, you know, King is the hero and the leader, but you know, the people that deserve as much credit as he deserved, to me, in my opinion, is John Lewis. Because he was right at the forefront, on the ground, you know.
Well, just hold that point right there. Okay. Brother Ahi, you there?
Yes, I am here.
What
do you think
about Martin Luther King?
And Ernest, you bring up maybe the crust of what I wanted to talk about. And that letter he wrote from the jail in Montgomery is taught in English classes today. It's a classic.
Was it Birmingham?
Oh, Birmingham. Well, yeah, Alabama. Birmingham. Thank you, Professor. It's a classic. It's taught in English classes today. And yes, of course, John Lewis, good trouble. His sacrifice. But John Lewis was following a vision. John Lewis got in line with a charismatic young leader, human, thoughts, but with a clear vision of what he wanted, right or wrong, this integration stuff. Because let's not forget that before his assassination, he had basically said, well, these white people are white people. And I don't know if he said sinking ship or burn a house, but he said, we in one of them. I fear that I have led my people into this, because reality started to come to him. After getting his butt beat in Chicago, worse than anything he could experience in the South, and seeing that these people are who they are and have been consistent and keep telling you who they are. He was a dreamer and didn't believe it. He dreamed of something better, but it is what it is. And that's where he was before his assassination. FBI, Hoover, he the number one enemy. You know, Hoover, whole thing was, we can't let these Negroes get nowhere near equal nothing, because it was a threat to the whole democracy. In his mind, and looking through him, you can get an idea of what white America was thinking. And what's really funny is there's a brother, and I forget his name, and he was an anthropologist, and he wrote a book about some of these people's ancestries. And Hoover, according to him, and I can't think of his name, but it'll surface shortly, he had Negro blood. But anyway, Hoover
excuse me, Ahi. You mean J. Edgar Hoover?
Yes, yeah. The head of the FBI.
Okay, yeah, okay.
During that time.
Got you, thanks.
The same guy that was after the Panthers, you know, Tail Pro, all that kind of stuff, under him.
Point Tail Pro, yeah.
Point Tail, yes. Tell him about it, Professor.
I will.
Okay. You know, King is, we love him. We know he's human. He was a womanizer. And he probably was influenced from his personal life, loving these white women when he was in school, about this integration kind of deal before he was woke up. But he did grow, and he did develop. His life became expendable. It always was. They always wanted to get rid of him, but the government was willing to become complicit when he started talking about what was happening outside of America. And I'm sure the professor is going to talk about that a little bit. In Vietnam, his views in Vietnam, and how he was planning on bringing a plea to the United Nations and make this an international issue here in America with the people of African descent, descendants of people who were enslaved. And then there's always the Malcolm versus King thing. They all wanted the same thing, just had different ways of going about it. And fact of the matter is they had love for each other. King was hard on the brother. But even as King, I mean, Malcolm was hard on Brother King. But even as Malcolm started to mature a little bit and see the world for what, and another thing is, when Malcolm started talking about, you know, everybody is everybody, that he had some type of rose-colored glass in front of him after visiting those Arabs, the same Arabs who were enslaving Africans. Had he lived, all of that would have changed. But so that's the narrative they want to put out there. But get back to King. They both had the same destination, and they were more alike, and they had respect and love for each other. Dr. King, had courage. He was on the front line too. Dr. King, when he died, he had the body of an old man because of the stress that he was under every day. Somebody wanting him dead. Because, you know, we're not going to have leaders like that. I don't know if we're going to ever have leaders like that again. So many of our leaders, it just came natural to them to say, well, I'm fighting for my people and I know my life is on the line. How many of our leaders today got that type of mentality? Have we changed and morphed into something else where they feel like, well, I'm not going to fight. I'm going to have to compromise and all the rest of this stuff to get this money, and that's going to be our liberation? Are we going to get back to the ones who just were uncompromising? Basically, that's what I have to say about Dr. King. Was a fighter. He was a leader. He was fearless. He died too young. He knew that it was coming from him. They told him he was coming from him, so he had to live with that. He was not a wealthy man. So much emphasis is put on money. He was not wealthy. Malcolm was not wealthy. Marcus was not wealthy. The brother down in Mississippi who was the NAACP, who they murdered him, was not wealthy. What's the artist from Robinson? The artist Robeson, Paul Robeson, our greatest, even with W.E. Du Bois, who was bougie. These were not wealthy people, and the money was not the issue. So, what I have to say about Dr. King is it takes more courage to let somebody beat on you and put your life on the line than you not stand there and swing back. And even though he followed a man's theory, resistance plan, who didn't like us, he called the people in South Africa a bunch of Kaffirs. The guy from India. He didn't care nothing for us. Gandhi. He had an effective plan for his people down there, but at the same time, he was looking down at the people whose land he was on down in South Africa and they were taking over. But anyway, he followed Gandhi, and it was effective. It was effective because it embarrassed America. Americans showed them it's the hypocrites that they were when you got film of them hosing down people and beating women and children and the hangings and the murdering of people just for a vote. It was embarrassing to America to the point where, okay, they had to make some symbolic gestures while still keeping on their plan to destroy my people. And now even destroy our legacy here in America. And Dr. King was all about not that. He was hoping that we could go with the white folk and make this happen. But 80% of the white folks say no then, and 85% of the white folks say no now. And him coming to that realization, I would really like to know what he would think maybe 10 years after this, after his assassination. Okay, thank you, Brian.
All right, then. Brother Mashinda. Brother Mashinda.
And Rashid. Hey, good evening, Professor.
How you doing, man? It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I'm doing good. You hanging in there, too?
Oh, yeah. You know, you deep in the South, and you know Martin Luther King loved doing the South. Not necessarily in New Hampshire, but in Alabama and Georgia and Atlanta. But go ahead, Mashinda. What do you think about King?
Well, I just have nothing but positive memories, I guess, you know, growing up as a kid. I mean, I was, you know, immersed in Dr. King from day one, you know, as far as whenever I was into the world, you know, parents, you know, put me on point about Martin Luther King, among other things. But I remember very vividly about, you know, with assassinations and all that kind of stuff. But the positive, you know, before all that, my whole take on it is, you know, dude was a martyr, you know, and, you know, in the sense of the definition of a martyr, you know, it said sacrificed his life to, you know, he had a vision, he had a mission, you know, just one guy who felt empowered to do something and got some people to get behind him. And it was a revolution. And like it was previously stated in this podcast, you know, all the negative forces out there, J. Edgar Hoover type FBI, COINTELPRO, I mean, that was in place for a reason because, you know, like, who is that? That was that Malcolm X movie by Spike Lee. There's too much power for one man. You know, Malcolm had those guys, you know, dudes from the neighborhoods, might have been in who knows what, but the dudes turned their life around. So when you have that kind of organization, you know, that was what it was all about. Let's break up it. We got to create disorganization. I usually reference movies a lot of times in making examples. I mean, like American Gangster, this Italian guy asked Frank Lucas, who was played by Denzel Washington. He said, how's your day or whatever? He said, every guerrilla for, you know, every guerrilla for itself, you know, And he said that would never happen with Italians. He said more powerful than one man's life is order. You know, what's more important is order. And so I say that to say that when you have order, and that's the underworld that I'm referring to, but still, that's how they were successful to a certain degree because they had loyalty and order. And so during those times, on the positive, flip it on the other side, same thing. You know, you have organization, you have people, and they wasn't perfect. You know, people go against one another, in-house fighting, but to be able to create a movement, you know, be part of a movement. You know, there were a lot of others, and you know, he was inspired, like Brother Ahi said, he was inspired by Gandhi and you know what he was talking about, you know, peaceful protesting, nonviolent. So anyway, like I say, I just grew up in it. You know, I grew up around it, you know, grew up, I marched, I've done things, you know, on the local level and within my own right, you know, been a part of different things coming up. So you know, hey, we all thought it was for a great cause, and I think it all had, for the most part, for the greater good. Back to that COINTELPRO, you know, I think that was the war. You know, we can't let these folks get too powerful, and so when they was approaching that level, it's like, man, these guys got to be stopped. No matter what the philosophy is, I mean, it's, you know, in terms of these guys got a backing. It was white people following Martin Luther King. So when you got this kind of backing, and then like it was mentioned earlier in the podcast, you start talking about the institutions in America and how racist and institutionally racist they are, and things like that. Oh man, you start, you know, pulling back the veil. And so when you start doing that, wait a minute, you start exposing folks, that kind of thing. Well, so they had to end all that, you know. So they it was a full court press. That's what it was on all the black organizations, and you know, in-house fighting created, you know, just, you know, a lot of stuff was generated and by design. And oh man, so but anyway, I just salute the brothers. Birthday, just had a birthday, you know, and every year, you know, I get a day off. And not only that, you know, it was a march in this town. I didn't know they were, it was so cold. Well, what we call cold, it's pretty cold. And we wasn't going outside. I didn't realize that they were still having a little march. And I seen like the tail end of it, police cars was behind it. I guess it was the actual sanctioned march. And it was kids, little kids, older people, all kind of folk walking. It was over with. I caught it at the tail end. But my point is, they still trying to, you know, celebrate it. I'm sure in other areas, you know, they're really acknowledging it. But that's what it's about. Let's get rid of DEI. Let's get rid of anything black. Let's not talk about black history. That's part of the plan. So that part of that full court press. So anyway, he evolved. Not, you know, he was a youngster, and then he tried, he boy, he was 39 or 30, he was young when he died, you know. So I'm just saying, he had to, you know, he went through growth spurts and started, you know, looking at it for what it is. And then, man, with that kind of power, you know, we can't have this. And so he met his demise. But anyway, I salute the brother. I have no more to say at this time.
All right, thanks, Machina. Good point. Brother Hendrick, you there? Joe? Are you there, Joe? All right, Brother Rasha Key.
Yes. I'm one of those people who was about 3 years old when Martin King was martyred. And I was about a couple of months old when Malcolm was martyred. And I'm just happy to say that I was living during the time that they were around, even though it was a very short time, because of how prolific they were in the work that they did. And listening to Brother Ahi and Brother Ernest, a few things they were talking about, I was thinking about. And so when Malcolm, and I know it's about Martin, but I got to mention Malcolm too. Well, let me go back to King. Let me just stay with King. As far as King and the things that he accomplished, as far as uniting many people, I think his goal and intentions were the correct thing. But by us being, you know, subjugated by these people that are just they're terrors. They're the real terrorists. And I guess he figured out that he couldn't bring these people around to become human or to act like they were human. So that's when he said what he said. And I think, you know, with the examples of what they're still doing today, it's, you know, I don't know if they will ever, you know, at least I know in my lifetime, become just people or people who would want to not be greedy. And I don't think they'll ever be people that's human, because they're inhumane. But yeah, I'm very proud to have learned about Brother Dr. Martin Luther King, because exceptional person. The letter from the Birmingham jail, his speeches, not the speeches that they put out front, but the speeches when he has all of these eloquent sayings, and he studied not only Christianity, but theology, and he had other perspectives, and that's what I think he was so he was able to reach multiple people because of his intellect. And the last thing I want to say is that he was one of those folks that were popular, and he did a lot of work, but there are other people who were not as prolific and popular as him in their own right that are very instrumental in shaping the lives of many, many people. And Professor Ra, I take my hat off to you. You are one of those people. And yes. that's not to say that the people on here are not like that, but I've been able to be around you for a great amount of my life. And many people say the same thing. So I would say that there are other people who is not as popular, but as effective as Dr. Martin Luther King. And Dr. Martin Luther King was a great man, in my opinion.
Good. Yeah. Brother Hembrick, how you doing? You're on mute. Yeah. There you are. We were talking about Martin Luther King and what he meant to you and what you thought of him. What's your opinion?
I'd have to say he was the greatest orator of the 20th century. I have to say that about the brother. You know, I was like in the 10th grade when he was killed. Didn't know a lot then, but studying over the years, you know, there were many, you know, many antecedents before him, Vernon Johns was one. I think Kareem had made a movie about that brother. William Blyden, you know, the pastors kind of laid the groundwork back in those days. And King, because he could speak so well, there was a brother Dixon who really got the bus boycott and all that stuff going, because Martin was such a great speaker. They put him out there, you know, to lead. just like in churches on Sunday, them good speakers, you know, can get folk to join in and whatnot. After studying and whatnot over the years, I have to say I'm not with the philosophy that he was trying to put forth. I was more Malcolm, but, you know, Malcolm was tied up in the Islamic stuff also. Come to find out about that later on also. But, you know, I commend the brother. He made a sacrifice. I think the last year of his life, he really kind of was coming out of the thing he had been promoting all along. That's probably why they took him out. You know, he was all into the Greek thing, and, you know, those folks really supported him. Get the name, what is that? Can't think of the fraternity that he was in. But, you know,
Alphas.
Yeah, Alpha Sigma or something. I call them all Greek freaks myself. All the stuff is stolen from Africa. But, you know, I give him his props. You know, he gave his life for what he believed. I still don't think that's the way for black people. We ain't gonna never get that, what he was seeking. But he died for what he believed. And, that's about all I got to say. But there are some leaders. Who was that? I was speaking earlier about leaders. There are leaders. They kind of international. You don't see many of them in the United States, but Ephraim Toure and Burkina Faso and Ariana Shaparu was the president of the African League, I think it was. I believe that's the name of the organization. But you got to kind of go outside of the U.S. to see what's going on. And to bring another point, that's the connection that they do not want us to make.
Niger, Mali.
Who?
Niger, Mali.
Oh, yeah, and the brother in Chad.
Yes.
The sister in, what's that? The southwest part of Africa. I can't think of her name or the country right now, but there's stuff.
Mulima in South Africa.
No, it's not South Africa. It's a,
right, that brother.
The nation starts with the N. It's a sister. And
I know you're talking, I can't think of her name.
Yeah, yeah.
She on YouTube.
Yeah, but I don't know. We got a brother. We have a friend who wrote a book about a lot of those marches and stuff that was going on, about the brothers that was out in the woods going alongside that were armed just in case something went down. And the speaker Gandhi, you know, them old sheiks had them swords sharpened on the outskirts also. So it wasn't totally nonviolent as people think. Like the old saying goes, it's a different story
somebody's TV zone. Okay, it stopped. Go ahead, Joe.
All right, that's it, Rob.
All right, we appreciate what everybody said, if I understand correctly. And all of y'all made some excellent points. And Rashki said this is about education. I saw C. King a little different than most of you. It took me time to really understand him. You have to study him in order to really get grasp his contribution to our forward movement toward living conditions in America. I mean, when he went into Montgomery, he had no idea that he would become the leader of the Montgomery boycott. You know, they chose him because he was new. But he came, you know, he had a car, you know, him and Coretta, they They didn't have to ride the bus or anything, but he took on that struggle, and it was a year struggle. But they did desegregate the buses. That's a major accomplishment. You understand? I mean, they took up the fight with the various struggles in Montgomery. Now, there were struggles before that. They didn't wasn't as prominent and successful as he is. Because sustaining a struggle is different from starting a struggle and then saying, oh, ain't no, you know, we ain't going to get it, or people just get tired or whatever. But the whole, the people together for a year, and them women who were day workers for the rich white people, and the money that they lost when they stopped riding the buses, and then the organized car rides for the people that had to go to work instead of riding the bus. You know, even though the white folks thought they could wait them out, but they couldn't. That was a hell of a strategy and an organization that was sustained for a year. I tried to take that strategy to other places, but it didn't work out as well as it did in Montgomery. But that started the movement for other civil rights, like Coretta Scott King said. Well, we really didn't want much. We just wanted them to treat us fair and with dignity. But once we saw that they wasn't going to even do that, we just said, well, we might as well go for the whole thing, desegregation. But going back to Martin Luther King, this brother entered college at 15 in a special program for Morehouse because he was brilliant. He was a brilliant young man. His daddy King, well, first of all, he was born Michael Lewis King, or Michael King. And his daddy and him went to Europe and went to Martin Luther's church. And that's when he came back and changed both of their names to Martin Luther King. His name was his daddy's name was Michael King. And at first Martin Luther King was Michael King. And then he changed both of their names. And that's how he became Martin Luther. You know, that's a spiritual name. That's a religious name. That's a white people. And so, but the point is that it was, you know, and then he was a straight A student in high school and in junior high. He was an intellectual. You know, he was skipped in the ninth grade, the 12th grade. He entered college at 15, was ordained a minister and got his BA at 19, went on to get his master's the following year and then got his PhD before he was 25. This brother was rolling. Now, his daddy was an activist. He met Coretta Scott King because her daddy was the minister of Ebenezer Church and she was attending there. And he went And Martin Luther King's father was the assistant pastor of Ebenezer. And that's how they hooked up. And then they eventually got married and had some kids and things. But then now here's a brother, they say, okay, I give props to my Lewis. He got beat a lot. But he was inspired by Martin Luther King. That's who got him in the movement. And second, no one got as much as Martin Luther King. He got stabbed by a sister in Chicago. And they said if he would have just moved or breathed harder, he would have died. And then at the same time, he was in prison. He was arrested at least 8 times arrested. And a lot of those arrests, he was roughed up. Him and Abernathy and them brothers. And when they went to Alabama and when they went into Atlanta, Georgia. And then going all the way back, you know, they bombed his house 5 times. bombed his house, but he wouldn't stop. Now, his philosophy came, I'm not saying he didn't talk to Gandhi and didn't talk to other ministers, but he was a Christian minister. Christians believe in turning the other cheek, nonviolence. It's the First Testament that the Jews said an eye for an eye. And that's when they came out with the movie about Gandhi, and he said, well, if everybody did an eye for an eye, the whole world would be blind. And so they tried to credit him. But Martin Luther King was already nonviolent. His daddy was nonviolent then. They were already moving in that direction. Now, you can, it takes a lot of strength. You know, I was like Malcolm. You know, when King came out to L.A. and stuff, I didn't go see him or anything, because at that time, my mind was street gangs, and you know, if somebody sick a dog on me, I'm going to turn him into a rug. You understand? I mean, that's the way I looked at it, you know. But King, and all them wonderful, but he embarrassed that. He said, Brother Ernest, he embarrassed America by getting national attention and showing how they treated people just fighting for justice, for desegregation. He wasn't fighting people. He was fighting against segregation laws. Civil rights movement was an integrationist movement. That's why white people were involved, Jews. They were discriminated against. Catholics, all that. And they were ministers too of the Catholic, of the Judeo faith also. And all this stuff about communists, they were socialists, join everything, communists, all. They join anything that they can get recognition in. And I wouldn't be surprised. But as Joe said, and as Machina said, and understand, we have to begin to, why do we want to know about King? First of all, is it about parades and speeches? Is that what you know about King? Oh, he was a great orator, he's a great speaker. That's what they want you to think. He was an activist. Now they got parades, and Danny Bigwell, them sponsored the LA parade. I talked to Danny on the phone the other day. And, you know, I was just happy to hear from him because I hadn't heard from him in years. But anyway, he called me because my alarm told him that I was going through some health challenges, man. Called to wish me well and things, and they invite me down to the Citadel to have lunch with me. But let me just tell you this. Getting back to Martin Luther King, we sell ourselves short on our true leaders and our true accomplishments. White folks want to make you think he didn't desegregate hotels, didn't desegregate, didn't fight for voting rights when he was there, when they signed the Voting Rights Act. You understand? That was very crucial in 1965. You understand? And he expanded the struggle to poor people and hunger and the Vietnam War. He said America was the biggest purveyors of violence. In the contrast between him and Malcolm, yes, Malcolm, King saw America through a dream that was not fulfilled, never came true, America's dream. You understand? Malcolm just saw it as a nightmare. That's what he said. But at the same time, they began to work together and come together and face their fate together. Yeah, they assassinated Martin Luther King. But we don't look at it as his assassination. From a Kawahita perspective, it was his sacrifice. Because you could say that they assassinated Jesus, but they always talk about his sacrifice. Jesus could have said, hey, the God is my daddy, get these nails out of my hand, get these thorns off the top of my head, and these nails out of my foot, and get me off this damn cross. I was just hustling. But he didn't take that position. When you are willing to put your life on the line for others, for others. King didn't have to do none of this. He had money. He had a middle-class lifestyle. He drove up there to Montgomery. You understand? He didn't have to get involved, but he accepted the invitation of history. We must begin to study him so we can teach our children about him. Not what Target say, not what Walmart say, not what NBC and ABC, as Roski always say, don't let the oppressor be your teacher, wrote a song about it through AI. But at the same time, what are we really seeing? See, they want you to say, oh, he's a dreamer. He wasn't dreaming. When he went and gave the speech, the speech from Birmingham jail was to black ministers who criticized him for coming into their town, talking about he was a troublemaker. Yeah, they put, hey, man, you'd be surprised at the pressure white folks put on black ministers. You know, they were renting them buildings for their churches, and they were, you know, they were telling them, you know, that just wait, time ain't ready. And King is causing in trouble. He's a troublemaker and all that. And many of them had to go along with it. But he had Reverend Shutterfield, Reverend C.C. Vivian, who said, what kind of people are these that wouldn't let people register to vote? And that's more, not even voting, that's just a register. You understand? So Martin Luther King was a hell of a hero for our struggle. And others were a part of that struggle. He began to develop strategies to get around the jail. So he said, look, we got to get the young people so that, because when the old folks would demonstrate, they would fire them from their jobs. And if they got locked up, that was their excuse to fire them. So he said, let's get young people in the movement. He had many young people following him. And things like that. That's where SNCC came from, Student for a Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. That was Martin Luther King. John Lewis never would have been a part of that. He was part of the Freedom Rides. All that came from the Martin Luther King movement. Jesse Jackson, Andrew Young, you know, James Meredith. All of them brothers. You understand? All them brothers. All them sisters. Ella Baker. All of them were inspired by King. He unleashed a movement. There were two movements, I tell you all the time, of the Black Liberation Movement. There was the Civil Rights, which is an integration and religious movement against laws and a struggle for justice. That's what Martin Luther King said. Getting back to his nonviolent philosophy. What did he say? The only thing you do with an enemy is turn him into a friend. And the only purpose of looking down on somebody is to pick him up. That was Martin Luther King quote. You understand? And you know, even in the Christian prayer, Brother Ernest, you know, forgive. You know, he was into forgiveness, which, you know, that's a little shaky for a lot of people. Forgiveness for their cruelty and their laws and their racist and prejudicial behavior. But at the same time, that's a part of this religious doctrine. In the Lord's Prayer, they say, forgive me as I forgive others who have caused problems with me. So that was part of his doctrine. But at the same time, you got to credit him with, you wouldn't have these segregated schools and major colleges and major entertainment things and other things if it wasn't for the desegregated. Now, a lot of people say that integration hurt us. Integration was the biggest problem we had because we were locked in the black community, so we only could buy from black people. And we only could entertain black people. We had a Negro League in baseball, a Negro League in basketball, and you know, and things of that nature. So people say we lost all of that because of integration. Well, a lot of people, white folks, just bought their teams that straight out and shut them down in baseball. And the same thing with basketball. And then once you integrated into the white folk league, well, that opened up a whole new Pandora box. You look at the day. The majority of the schools, many of the schools, I was watching Alabama, LSU, Georgia Tech, and University of Georgia. All of them are prejudicial red states, but their predominant entertainment are black athletes. That's called exploitation. You can entertain me, but you can't vote. You can entertain me in the daytime, but I'm voting for Trump at night. Who's for what? White nationalism. You understand? See, you have to be able to give a good analytic perspective of how corrupt, and as Andre Elijah Muhammad would say, wickedly wise these white folks are. They give you the impression that you included, as Joe always say, the illusion of inclusion. You understand? Look at what they're doing to people right now in this deportation. And what would King be doing? He'd be leading demonstrations. It's not about no parade. Very few people hold protests in his honor, even though he never got all that he was trying to get. So his struggle is still there. Now, everybody said, well, ain't nobody else going to come along like him. Well, that's what they said about Du Bois. That's what they said about Garvey. That's what they said about most black people. Because they don't want nobody else like them to come along. But wherever there's injustice, Martin Luther King said this, wherever there's injustice, if there's injustice anywhere, it's a threat to justice everywhere. So I believe and I have faith that the struggle continues. And we have had great leaders. The Million Man March was a profound event. You understand? Now, the March on Washington was a profound event. And then after that, Sharpton is doing with the Action Network, National Action Network. But at the same time, people pick up the bloodstained banner and they continue the struggle. And we have to have faith in our leaders, but we have to study our leaders. Don't let that oppressor be your teacher. He'll have you throwing rocks at your leaders. He'll have you saying, well, look, he won't look at the positive aspects of their contribution. No, he'll always look at the negative part because he wants you to make you think you ain't accomplishing anything. He wants to take the fight out of you, the righteous anger out of you. Righteous anger. I ain't talking about no bad anger, no headache anger. I'm talking about anger to make you want to get out and get involved. And you know, people like and keep up with what's going on in the world. I watched Trump's speech today. Why did I watch it? So I could critique it. So I could understand, so I could teach others about it. So I could tell them, you know, what's true and what's not true. This is very important. To me, it might be important to nobody else, but I'm not to me. But going back to King, you know, here's a man whose mama, 7 years after he died, well, he died Yeah, 7 years. Maybe in six. She got assassinated in the church, or shot in the church by a brother. His mom. Alberta King. God just shot her. Come up. He hate black preachers. And he thought that black ministers was a menace, and he couldn't get to. He went to the camp to kill his daddy, but he was too far away, and she was the closest. That's why he shot her. His nut name, Marcus Wayne Gus Gooman or something like that. I mean, this is a sick puppy. We don't know how he got life. He was sentenced to death. Then they converted his sentence to life, and he ended up dying with a stroke, but at the age 45. And then Martin Luther King daddy, he died at the age of 84. But we need to pay attention to not just King, but the role Coretta Scott King played, the struggle she had with her sons, their divisiveness, their fighting over which way to go. One of his daughters wanted to be a Republican, and I mean, you have that, you have that. But one thing happened, and I praise the people for this. When he was assassinated in 1968, I was in college. That was my first year in college, 1968, April 4. People tore up cities all over. That means a lot, because that meant that they loved him too, and they were hurt about his assassination, about their killing him, or his, you know, things of this nature. And I'm telling you, throughout the South, all over. And then they marched to have a holiday, a national holiday. Well, make it a national holiday. It's really a federal holiday, because the banks and the post office don't run. When the banks are closed and the post office don't run, all federal facilities are shut down for that holiday. That's in every state. North Carolina or South Carolina was the last state to recognize in Arizona Martin Luther King's birthday. But Stevie Wonder and a lot of people pushed for the recognition of his birthday. And Ronald Reagan signed it, I think, in 1986. And it didn't become effective until 88, 89. But the point is that this is the only black person, that is recognized throughout the world, but recognized and honored in this country for its contribution. And the people made them do that. The people, because they were going to take off on his birthday anyway. You understand? Black people were going to take off on his birthday anyway. And many allies and people like that. He developed a relationship with Cesar Chavez, Martin Luther King did, a coalition with the United Workers. I mean, we got to give the man credit for his sacrifice, for his relentless, tireless work. When he went to Chicago, he said, Chicago is more dangerous than any of the cities in the South. That's something to say, because Chicago was supposed to have been the promised land for black people, as long as it was segregated. And I'm just telling you, man, we have a lot to learn about our leaders. Even Farrakhan, his sacrifice and commitment, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Marcus Garvey, E.B. Du Bois, just Fannie Lou Hamer, Ella Baker, Mary McLeod Bethune, you understand? Eric Blyden, you understand? I mean, a lot of black people paid the price for us to be where we are today. Not, you can say, oh, no. But not one inch of justice or freedom that you get was not because of, didn't come about because of the good heartedness of white people. It was because we forced them to recognize and give up critical space, life-giving and life-saving goods and services. And a measure of justice in the justice system. No, the Supreme Court never been our friend. Never. Even with Thurgood Marshall. Thurgood Marshall got recognized for what he did before he became a Supreme Court justice. He was known as a dissenter when he got to be, because he wrote so many dissent statements of what they were doing. And you got to remember that, like Martin Luther King said, all we want you to do is live up to what you say you wrote down on the paper. You know what I'm saying? All men are created equal and endowed by their sin to be treated fairly and blah, blah, blah. Live up to it. That's all he was saying. And he tried to hold up each of the fire. He embarrassed. I'm telling you, we got world condemnation of America, exposed America for its racist and vicious, sicking dogs on women and children, water hoses on women and children. Wouldn't let them go to college or school. School right across the street, they had to walk miles uphill to go to school in the South. So I see it. It took me time until I started studying and became a professor of Black Studies. I never would have came to this realization about King. Because, I was straight Malcolm and straight Marlon and them and the Black Congress. And I wasn't in none of those organizations. I was never a Muslim or nothing like that. I never a member of us organization at that time. You understand, I'm a major supporter of those organization now, a major follower of those organization now. And I accept the Cowie the Philosophy and Kwanzaa and Nguza Saba, as well as the Kiapo. Kiapo is the Black People Pledge to each other. The Nguza Saba is the Seven Principles. And Kwanzaa is a Black holiday celebration of Nguza Saba, and as well as Cowie the Philosophy, the best of African thoughts and practices, an ongoing exchange with the world where we take the best of what African people have done and look at the positive aspects of their contributions to the movement. All right, anybody want to respond to what I've said or have any closing comments? Ernest?
Like you say, a lot of people, because I found out like later in life, that people like Harry Belafonte funded most of that, those marches and those freedom rides and all that. So he was kind of the funding behind King and Abernathy and them. And then Abernathy and some of those other reverends with King, they did all the strategizing. And then, like you say, but King had, he was a great orator. So, so he was the guy you need to get out in front, somebody that can really talk and spellbound the people, talking to people. So
it's a great community.
Then more and more you find out more and more, as time goes on, what was really happening behind the scenes and stuff.
Well, and you're right. He was a scholar. King, like I said, you skipped an exam in college. Went on, got a doctorate degree from Boston College. So yeah, he was smart.
Yep.
And even just a great orator, because your tongue is hooked up to your brain. Mm-hmm. He's a great thinker too, and he could write. You know, he could write. You know, he wrote his speeches. He wrote down things. They try to say he got a lot of it from the president of Morehouse, but oh man, I mean, here's a man where the FBI taped him and tried to get him to commit suicide. Yeah. You know, and all this stuff about him being a womanizer. Please, this is Abernathy in the book, The Walls Came Tumbling Down. Abernathy said that him and King went over to this woman house and that he got the drink and he was drunk, Abernathy. I read the book. Now, I'm telling you. Most of the book was about the civil rights movement. But the white folks like to say it was Abernathy talking about King with messing with women. There's two incidents that he went there. And when he woke up, he saw King come out the woman's room. And he said, he just figured that they had sex or something. Anything. He don't know. He was drunk. Second, when he was at the hotel before he got assassinated, there was a woman up there trying to get with him. But when you are a speaker like that, you're going to have women coming at you. When you are a leader like that, he was a celebrity to these people. They wanted to get close to him. But all this stuff about him chasing women and all that, that's all FBI stuff.
Yeah.
You understand?
A lot of that's made up stuff.
Yeah. You know what I mean? They do anything. They want you to run with them. You know what? Yeah. They say gossip and bad news travel way further than good news.
Yeah.
They want you to focus on that rather than his accomplishments and achievements. That the FBI could have been sending them women after him to try to get him to do something. We don't know how many women he turned down. You understand? So we got to look at things differently. You know, always different. That's what I like about Roger Key. They never let, and Maulana teaches this, he was one of the first to say, never let the oppressor be your teacher. Not even, and don't let Uncle Tom be your tutor. You understand? So that's very important. Anybody else have any closing comments? Aye? Barry? All right, Roger G, take us home.
All right. Tomorrow, let me show everybody what we have on the show so everybody can see. All right, let's check it out. Okay, so tomorrow we have Hydea, a young lady out of Oklahoma City. The topic is respect. That's the question. Is it earned or entitled? So we're going to have that discussion. And then we have a Thursday show. We have Carlton Santa Davis on the Roots Reggae Reasoning Session. He's a longtime drummer. Prolific drummer. And it says that he performed with Bob Marley and the Wailers, Peter Tosh, and many others. And I know he's on tour with Ziggy Marley on a consistent basis. But yeah, he's a very prolific drummer. And that's on Thursday.
Okay.
So that's what we have coming up.
All right, next Tuesday, Dr. Rutherford, brother to have his own garden and farm. And he was also a podiatrist and helped save a lot of people from diabetes. He'll be back on. Hopefully you'll join me with Dr. Rutherford. He called me the other day and I asked him to come on the show again, and he said he would. So not just next Tuesday, Dr. Rutherford.
That's excellent. Okay, well, each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.
Go ahead, Ernest. You got your hand up, or you just stand by? We can't hear you, Ernest.
All right.
All right. All right.
All right, Rob. Rob, stay on for a minute.
Okay.